Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Wednesday, the 13th of April, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. Please check out our website. There's an announcement on that website that I think will be of interest to all of our Buckmaster Show listeners about the future of this program. We are live weekday mornings from 9 to 10. We re-air at 7 to 8 in the evening. The lineup for today's show includes a newsmaker interview with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Mr. Cunningham will be scheduled to be with us at the bottom of the hour. At about 20 minutes past the hour, we'll be talking about eating gluten-free. Almost said glutton-free. Gluten-free. And we're going to start our show today with Bob Hendricks. He's the Buckmaster Show contributor on education. He'll be talking about the big changes, the way teachers are contracting with school districts. And we'll wrap up the show with a newsmaker interview with State Senator Kyrsten Sinema. Buckmaster Show is primarily an interview-driven talk show, but there's always room for listener comments and questions. You can call us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 529-3508, 529-3508. So we will begin with a conversation with our Buckmaster Show contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks. He serves as head of the Department of Educational Policy Studies and Practice at the University of Arizona. In addition to his administrative responsibilities, he teaches organizational theory, human resource management, and policy analysts at the master's and doctoral level. Former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, Dr. Hendricks was named Arizona's top school superintendent in 1989. And today we're going to focus on some dramatic changes in the way teachers in Arizona contract with school districts. Bob Hendricks, good to see you. Good morning to you.
Good to be back.
What's going on with the way, for years, of course, this is really changing the model, isn't it? The way teachers work out agreements with districts.
Yeah, actually, the legislation that was initially passed in 2009 and has been somewhat stalled through a process of court appeals, but ultimately has the court is decided in favor of the state, says that seniority and salary and contract guarantees are essentially no longer in place for Arizona schools teachers. And this is probably one of the most restrictive state changes that I'm aware of. I look across the country. Essentially says tenure is out the window.
Wow. That's huge.
It is huge. It is huge. And not surprisingly, the Arizona Teachers Association was greatly stirred by the possible advent of this and took it to court. And again, they were not successful in defeating the implementation of this legislation.
When you say tenure, I think normally of higher education, but are you talking about at the K through 12 level?
Yes, traditionally tenure in K through 12 is a process by which after 3 years of continuous successful teaching, on your fourth year, you're granted tenure. Tenure historically is rooted in the idea that it protects teachers with the purpose of academic freedom. The umbrella of tenure, I think, has been interpreted much more broadly than that. And you know, the public perception, and I might say it also is my perception, is that tenure in some cases has protected teachers that go far beyond the scope of academic freedom and strike at the issue of competence and commitment to the profession. And these folks, and admittedly a small group of people, have been allowed to stay when the system, you know, hidden under the protection of tenure, and that's been removed.
Has it been removed at the higher? Did this law pertain just to K through 12?
Just K 12.
So not the
university
system.
No, it does not affect
system.
The higher education sector at all. Just K 12.
But seniority really has been a backbone, hasn't it, of teaching in this state?
It has been. there have been some studies that have suggested that market forces, market values might change if tenure did not exist. I'm not convinced of that, but I am somewhat convinced the fact that if principals and school administration step up, that there may be some opportunities to really take a closer look at people who perhaps are less competent in the classroom and either find a more suitable placement for them or ask them to leave the profession.
It's 12 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Robert Hendricks is the Buckmaster Show contributor on education. There's lots to talk about on the education front. And we're talking about this this change concerning tenure and seniority. What was the motivation, Dr. Hendricks, behind this legislation?
I think the perception, it reflects a public perception that if there were more flexibility, more latitude within the scope of employment, that districts and schools would have more flexibility. Certainly with the president's race to the top promotion and initiatives, it suggests that there should be that flexibility. And this legislation falls in line with that. There's also another piece of it I think that's interesting in that, and this also raised the ire of the teacher associations, in that school districts are no longer allowed to support with release time teacher association leadership to work in schools. In other words, what was happening in many districts is that with public dollars, the leadership of teachers associations were being released from the classroom, were being paid their salary, and being allowed to work on behalf of the association, sometimes in juxtaposition to the needs or the desires of the district. And that's no longer allowed with this new legislation.
The timeline for dismissing teachers with cause, that has been shortened?
Yes, shortened. And again, I'm not sure that piece in itself is going to make all that much of a difference if the incentive is not there for administration, to take charge and to do something. Because terminating a teacher, whether they're on a probationary status or tenure status or what now is any general status, is a difficult and arduous process, particularly if it's if the cause for termination is competence. Competence is a metric that's very difficult to prove or disprove. It's very easy to prove a violation of a policy or a violation of a law. But when you look at the general teaching practice, it's much more controversial. And now when you add to it the measures of performance based on student achievement, it's got to get everybody's attention, because if you're going to use that as a measurement of competence, then it really leaves it wide open for all kinds of employment practices which may or may not be desirable.
Districts can issue contracts now at any times. Traditionally, there was a time when this district would issue the contract, right?
There was a magic date of April 15th, and okay. Now that date is off the table. And actually, districts can issue contracts at any point in time in the year, which is more common with the private sector workplace. And so, again, that gives districts flexibility. I actually think that's a good thing to have that opportunity to offer contracts at any point in time. However, if you're currently working and you're expecting to receive a contract by a particular deadline, districts under budgetary pressures to try to reorder their needs based on enrollment and monies coming in might delay that process, and that could create some angst for teachers.
So this is tied up in the court still?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not.
It's been resolved.
All right.
It's been resolved, and it is gone forth. And it's particularly, I think, of concern when schools and school districts are losing enrollment, because then you have that whole reduction in force process. And now the rules are different. Reduction in force is not based solely on seniority. It can be based on performance. It can be based on that individual's qualifications, that individual's interest in professional growth by taking more classes and degrees. So districts have lots of freedom to decide the formulas they want to use to determine which teachers stay and which teachers go. And under tenure, they would not be able to do that.
This would seem to weaken the teacher associations around this, the education associations, or as some would call them, unions.
It definitely, you know, is one of their playing cards. And I can see where they would be quite concerned about this, because my experience with most associations is that it's been very positive, that they do want to support teachers, they do want to work with districts, but the bottom line is, push comes to shove, if tenure is in their favor, they're going to use that, and now that's not available to them as a resource.
Only got actually just a few seconds left. Some general comments, Dr. Hendricks, on the new state budget and what it does to education.
Well, it guts it in a very devastating way. It's, you know, the earlier cuts, I think most educational agencies were able to find ways to strategically tighten their belt. Now we're not down to saving dollars. We're down to really finite programmatic changes, staffing changes, which I think are going to be devastating.
Dr. Robert Hendricks is the Buckmaster Show contributor on education, a hugely important area of our daily lives, of course, how we educate our young people, and he is a monthly contributor to our program. We thank him for that, and we wish you a great day. Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you, Bill.
It's coming up now on 19 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. You can learn more about our show, buckmastershow.com.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting. And you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastropub.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowland Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
It is 23 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show, Melissa Diane Smith. Ms. Smith is the co-author of the national bestseller Syndrome X. She's the co-author of that book with Jack Challum, who was with us yesterday on the Buckmaster Show at this hour, the Buckmaster Show contributor on nutrition. Ms. Smith has written extensively about a gluten-free diet in books titled Going Against the Grain and her newest Gluten-Free Throughout the Year. She writes a column in Better Nutrition magazine. She'll be featured at the annual Gluten-Free Food Fair Saturday, April 30th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Holiday Inn Palo Verde in Tucson. That event is free and open to all. Ms. Smith, Melissa, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much for having me.
Tell me about folks who have a sensitivity to gluten. How common is it, and what is gluten?
Well, gluten is a protein found in wheat, rye, barley, and most oats, and people react to it in different ways. The most dramatic way is with celiac disease. That's an autoimmune disease. It's actually the only autoimmune disease for which we know the cause. Basically, the body reacts to gluten in the diet in a way in which it attacks and damages the delicate lining of the small intestine. And the only way to treat and heal that condition is by eating a strictly gluten-free diet. But there are also people who don't have that damage that characterizes celiac disease in the gut, but they still do have symptoms that arise from eating gluten. And those people have non-celiac gluten sensitivity. It's believed that maybe for every one person that has celiac disease, there are 7 to 10 that have gluten sensitivity. And some researchers believe it may be as high as 2/3 of the population. So it's actually a growing phenomenon. More people are becoming aware that some of their symptoms that they have, it could be digestive, or it could just be things like anemia and fatigue and bone diseases like osteoporosis. Those can be related to gluten sensitivity.
Celiac disease is really a devastating disease, CD it's often referred to, and they have a very active chapter here in Tucson. First of all, two questions. How does someone know if they have celiac disease, and how do they know if it's not celiac, but it's a gluten sensitivity?
Yeah, those are really good questions. Celiac disease, fortunately, now can be screened for with blood tests. And the really good news about this upcoming gluten-free food fair on April 30th is that people can go there and get free blood tests to screen for celiac disease. And what's noteworthy this year is besides just the normal blood test to test for celiac disease, which is called TTG, each recipient of the test this year will get two tests, the other one being something called DGP. That's a brand new test, and the two of those together are considered to be much more effective in terms of screening for celiac disease and seeing if you have it. So celiac disease is a little easier to test for. Unfortunately, with gluten sensitivity, there is no definitive marker right now. So if a person tests negative for celiac disease but still feels like their symptoms might be related to their diet, especially when they eat pasta or bread and they feel worse, the best research at this time says to take gluten out of the diet for 2 to 3 months and see if your symptoms improve. And if they do, that is considered the best test right now, that you have gluten sensitivity.
I like the fact that some of the restaurants are getting on board here, local restaurants who have signed on for something called Gluten-Free Restaurant Row, and I think that's going to be featured at this event as well, correct?
Yes, that's one of several new firsts this year at the Gluten-Free Food Fair. First of all, it's been moved to a much larger facility because believe it or not, the attendance at the fair has grown tenfold in the past 5 years. It just continues to expand. So the Southern Arizona Celiac Group, which puts on the fair, needed to move to a much bigger facility. And like you said, one of the other big firsts, besides, like I said, offering two tests to screen for celiac disease instead of one, the other big first is this restaurant row, in which many restaurants, some high-end Tucson original restaurants and some more casual restaurants, are all going to be featured there offering gluten-free food to sample, and some will be offering discounts as well.
Well, that's wonderful. The restaurants are recognizing that this really is a big deal. Are you yourself gluten sensitive?
I am gluten sensitive. I do not have celiac disease, but yes, I do have gluten sensitivity. And many years ago, I found that I was able to overcome chronic fatigue syndrome and lose 30 pounds by going on a gluten-free diet. And since then, the research has come out and shown that, you know, there are many, many more people with gluten sensitivity that are testing negative to celiac disease, but they still are greatly helped by eating a gluten-free diet.
Melissa Diane Smith is with us. Her two books about gluten, Gluten-Free Throughout the Year, and she has a follow-up, Going Against the Grain. Both the books will be available, and Melissa Diane Smith will be there signing books at the Gluten-Free Fair, April the 30th, the Holiday Inn Palo Verde. This is a free event, a big crowd expected. There'll be plenty of free parking, and we will see you there, Melissa. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Okay, Melissa Diane Smith talking about the Gluten-Free Food Fair on April 30th. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. Stay with us on the Buckmaster Show.
Tucson's Jolt. Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. President Obama is bringing back his call for ending the Bush tax cuts for wealthy Americans. He's going to make a speech on reducing the nation's debt in about an hour. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor says he's waiting anxiously to hear what the president has to say.
Perhaps today we'll actually hear specifics on where he feels we need to go to reform the entitlement programs, because if we don't do that, these programs will go bankrupt.
The Pentagon says U.S. fighter jets are still dropping bombs in parts of Libya, even though NATO is in control of air operations. American officials had said the U.S. role was limited to flying support. If you're looking for work, the government says in a new report there were over 3 million job openings in February. It's the largest number since September 2008. Retail sales were up in March due in part to higher gas prices. Sales of furniture and electronics were also strong. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
It's spring, time for some fresh entertaining ideas.
Member Paula Rickenstein on the Spring Taste of Sam's Club Open House. Sample and shop free with no upcharge.
I get to taste before I make my menu, so I know my guests will love it all.
Fresh meats and produce, delicious sides, and more. All you have to do is
spring into Sam's Club.
The Spring Taste of Sam's Club, April 15th through 17th, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Not a member? Join at the event and get a free cookbook. Details at samsclub.com/spring. Sam's Club, savings made simple.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy, photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
With 30 projects under construction, including work at La Cañada Drive and the First Avenue bus pullouts, the Regional Transportation Authority is delivering our promise to you already. RTA has completed 174 projects, including 5 major roadways, and launched transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars are creating jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer. Please be careful of workers in those areas and obey all traffic signs. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Minutes now past the hour. Congratulations to one of the Buckmaster Show sponsors, Vero Amore. The Los Angeles Times this week named Vero Amore one of the 5 Tucson restaurants that thinks outside the box. Congratulations to our friends at Vero Amore. And happy birthday, the 37th birthday today, to Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham, who joins us. Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thanks. Thanks for having me this morning.
I hope you weren't out late last night partying.
Not at all.
No, not at all. You were ready to conduct the city's business bright and early this morning. There was a council vote, council meeting yesterday. The bus fares virtually for all riders will be going up July 1. Council voting 6-1 on that. Some of your thoughts. You voted with the majority.
Well, you know, when it comes down to it, nobody wants to raise fares, but nobody wants to cut service either. And the biggest thing that I wanted to understand was there going to be a service cut or not? It sounds the proposal that we voted on last night, it minimized the increase in fares, and we don't have a reduction in service at all. We'll maintain all the routes we already have. So I think it was a good package and a good compromise. All things being equal, I think that we should phase in to the 60% proposal over time, maybe a nickel next year and a nickel the year after, something to that effect. But to go from 40 cents to 60 cents for low-income fares all at once, the timing just wasn't right. I don't even know. Look, if we raised water fees like that, we'd have a revolution in the streets. So it just didn't really – the timing just didn't mesh with being able to raise it a full 20 cents. I mean, that's going up a full half. I think we should phase it in, though, absolutely to 60 cents in the next 2 years.
And for those that don't know what we're talking about, the council voted to limit the hike for low-income riders from 40 cents per ride to 50 cents per ride. Transportation planners had proposed hiking the low-income fare to 60 cents per ride. Now, what's this going to generate for the city coffers?
About between $1.2 and $1.4 million. We needed it to get about 200. We wanted to get 1.6 million. We ended up with about 1.4. There's another 200,000 that we need to come up with, and I think we'll be able to come up with that through some advertising and through some other cost recovery measures within transit. But again, the whole package is going to be talked about again because we have Smart Card coming up later this year. So. It's good that we got the fare increase. It's a long time coming. We hadn't raised the low-income fare for 10 years. Well, I think when the last time they raised it, gas was under $1.50 a gallon. So it needed to happen. But all things being equal, when we talk about the Smart Card, which is coming in the next year, the entire discussion will start over.
How's the bus company doing?
The bus company still runs. Only about 20% of their revenue is generated from farebox. I'd love to see it a little bit higher, but as the gas prices have gone up, again, routes are starting to fill up and buses are starting to fill up. And when that's going on, you have to give your hats off to the transit group. Again, there are all kinds of things that I still have some issue with as far as closeness of stops, on how we package our advertising, how we hedge fuel. I mean, there's all kinds of minutiae in there, but from a grand scheme, it's performing at a better level since I got on the council.
Yeah, and I mean, with the gas prices expected to go to $5 a gallon, perhaps by Memorial Day, I would think that would bode well for the future of SunTrans. At least give them quite a boost. Go ahead.
Well, the biggest thing is that as the demand goes higher and those routes start getting, we'll need to increase the number of buses on those routes, so our operating costs will significantly increase as well. And also there's the discussion about the actual cost of fuel. And so that discussion will be had. Again, there's some things with the space between stops and some other things that we can do for cost-saving measures and time-saving measures on the bus.
The council last night also, Councilman Cunningham, heard plans to hike water rates by 8.2% to all Tucson water users. This seems like a pretty hefty hike.
Well, the discussion last night was mostly fees. There's a discussion of fees, and then there's a discussion of rates. There are two things on the table right now. One of them is a rate increase, which will affect how much people pay by how much water they use. And then there's an effect of fixed fees, where we've restructured about 44 or 46 different fees that come with development, or when you build new, or when you tamper with your water meter and things of that nature. So we've restructured all these fees. So it comes out to there's a projected revenue increase of 8.2%. But some people will actually be paying less on the fees and some people will be paying more. It kind of depends. The big one is the biggest discussion that I think in all of those fees, the biggest one that I'm worried about is there's a proposal to increase the line inspection fees in new construction. And since we don't have any new construction anyway, it's kind of like adding insult to injury. I'd love to see if we could scale that one back or put it on hold for a year or something like that. Because if it's not going to generate any revenue, why raise the fee?
Paul Cunningham is with us, Tucson City Councilman. It is now coming up 42 minutes past the hour. Also at the council meeting yesterday, the FBI investigation over Rio Nuevo. What's that all about? Why is the FBI investigating Rio Nuevo?
Well, I quite frankly, it's because there was a substantial amount of money and no one seems to know where it went, and it's actually all accounted for, I believe, from what we're being told, is that you can find a receipt and you can find a check for all the things that happened. They'll go through it. If someone is criminally culpable in Rio Nuevo over the 10 years that they spent all that money, then they definitely need to adhere to the law and do the consequences. I think the FBI should be due diligence. But again, I welcome it with open arms. I hope they go through it, and I hope they find something. I'd love to be able to find a way to get some of that money back. So
this is a joint investigation with the state attorney general. Do you know exactly what they're looking at, or are they just looking at the whole, looking obviously for possible criminal wrongdoing?
Well, you know, they did the audit, and the process has been reasonably the process has been they've tried to make it as open as possible in the last since I've been on the council. But again, when you talk about Rio Nuevo, what you really talk about is, you know, there was $200 million and change at some point. And, you know, you do have some things built, but there's a lot of things that aren't built. And you have a lot of things that were paid for planning and consulting and stuff like that. And that's where I think the money went. And I'm very frustrated by that. Very frustrated by that. I'd love to know who were able to negotiate contracts like that. But I think when they go through it, if they find something, great. Somebody can go to jail, and maybe that'll make people a little bit happier. But I don't know what they're going to find, and I let the FBI. The FBI can go through any piece of paper they want. I'm good with it. I'm very happy that they're there.
University of Arizona and developers are nearing an agreement to build student apartments downtown. I think there's some kind of announcement coming up on this, isn't there, Councilman Cunningham?
Yeah, the development agreement with I think it's Jim Campbell's group is building a 13-story high-rise at Congress. Right next to the Rialto block. I think it's going to be amazing. I'm really excited for it.
It's the corner of North Stone Avenue and East Pennington Street.
Oh, that's another project.
Oh, that's another one?
Yeah, that's actually not the project I'm talking about. That's another project, but it's pretty exciting to see the U of A downtown. It's been a long time coming, I think, with several of the things going on. It's really neat to see downtown, like right in front of you, kind of come back to life. And it's been a unique experience from my perspective, because when I first got on the council, we were just at the beginning of that. And every week something new happens down there. There's been $120 to $125 million of private investment downtown in the last year and a half. And, you know, that was one of the things that was hurting this community. We'd go out to large corporations and say, hey, bring your national headquarters here. Bring your operations to Tucson. And one of the things that they talked about, they said, hey, your downtown definitely needs to improve if we want to come to you. And I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing this happen. You've really got to recognize Michael Keith and Fletcher McCusker and then Luke Cusack, who've all taken the risk downtown, put their money where their mouth is, and opened businesses, and that's outstanding.
And Mr. McCusker, the chief executive officer of the Providence Service Corporation, they located their headquarters downtown. That is really kind of getting others involved, isn't it?
Well, Providence, I think, has 50,000 employees or something across the nation. They provide social service all Human Services around the country. They're an outstanding part of this community. And again, it's great to have that corporate headquarters. And now that Unisource is going in, it really brings some more people working downtown. We have people starting to live downtown. And again, it should be something that will be an economic driver for us in the future.
Got about 1 minute with Councilman Cunningham. You're running for reelection.
I am announced.
What's the big issue going to be for you?
I think the big issue for Tucson right now is budget and debt. We've got some certificates of participation debt that I think we're overextended on. I'd love to see us try to be, you know, it's great that we're going to, if the economy recovers and we're able to get back to a better operating budget for Tucson, I think that it's important that we don't spend it all right away. I think it should go to debt reduction, and that'll be one of the issues that I'll focus on. I think that when you don't want to be overextended on anything. I think there's households across the country who faced foreclosures or they've gotten mired into credit card debt. You don't want a city being run like that as well. So we really need to look at debt reduction in this next year.
Okay, Paul Cunningham, happy birthday to you, your 37th birthday. We'll look forward to talking to you this summer as your campaign moves along and other issues dealing with city business. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks a lot. We're now at about 47 past the hour. Kirsten Sinema is coming up next, state senator, talking about the state budget. That's next.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tancredi, at the southwest corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tancredi, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Tucson's Regional Transportation Authority uses your tax dollars to create jobs and make local travel faster and safer. Transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle and the completion of 5 major roadways are examples of how RTA is delivering on our promises to you. With 174 projects completed and 30 under construction, such as the First Avenue bus pullouts and La Cunada Drive, RTA wants to remind you to be careful of road workers and to obey all traffic signs. RTA, delivering our promises to you.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson community. Our thrift shop donations and sales provide more than half of needed funding, which goes to programs like Operation School Bell. Since its inception, Operation School Bell has provided clothing and school supplies for more than 38,000 children. But we need your help. Donate an item or a financial gift. Shop our thrift store or volunteer. For more information on how you can make a difference, visit AssistanceLeagueTucson.org.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates Certified Public Accountants. Flowers, Rieger Associates, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. It's coming up now on 53 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. I want you to check out our website, buckmastershow.com. We have an important announcement on the website that we would like to share with our listeners, so please check that out. Kirsten Sinema is expected to be with us. We are trying to reach her, touch base with her, Arizona State Senator, Democrat, who represents the 15th District. She previously served three terms in the Arizona House of Representatives from January 2005 to January 2011. In 2010, Senator Sinema was picked as one of Time Magazine's 40 Under 40, Time said, in an epic election cycle, a new generation of civic leaders is already at work trying to fix a broken system and restore faith in the process. Time Magazine calls her a rising star of American politics. She's a native of Tucson and moved to Phoenix in 1995. Senator Sinema joins us now on the Buckmaster Show Live Line. Senator, thanks for being with us.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
It's great to be with you. Tell me, our friend Steve Farley, Representative Farley, is saying the latest word from the Republican leadership is that the session will be ending sometime between next Tuesday and next Thursday. Is that what you're hearing?
Yep, I think that's accurate. Now, people have placed a lot of bets on when it's going to end, and I think one of the most likely bets is sometime around 3:30 a.m. Friday morning of next week. So talk about a good Friday.
Give me your assessment of how this session will be remembered.
Gosh, well, I think there's a couple key things. One, I think there'll be a lot of recognition of the Senate's work to defeat those five anti-immigrant bills this year. That was certainly, I think, unexpected by many members of the community, although those of us in the Senate were well prepared and expected that result. But around the nation, and I think certainly around Arizona, people were surprised to see us reject those measures. I think that'll be one thing that folks remember. The other thing I think that people remember is the gun legislation that's passed this year. A bill is on the governor's desk. She has to make a decision today on whether or not to allow guns on college campuses. And there's another bill that would allow guns in government buildings and public areas. That bill is up for debate in the House today. So I think there'll be a lot of discussion about those two bills. And the final thing is that there's a lot of legislation that I just call crazy that's gone through the legislature this year. bills telling the federal government that they're not in charge of us, bills that seek to eliminate longstanding laws and practices in Arizona, and just cut a little bit overboard. Tea party gone wild kind of things.
The University of Arizona president, Dr. Robert Shelton, sent a letter to the governor urging her, please veto the guns on campus measure. What's your sense? Do you think the governor will veto it or sign it?
You know, it's really hard to predict, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I can't predict what the governor's going to do. She has made a couple important vetoes in the last several days that I'm grateful for that show good common sense, but I just can't predict what she'll do on this bill. My hope is that she'll side with the majority of Arizonans and stop this legislation because I think many of us recognize that guns and books just don't mix.
Senator Sinema, did the Senate, on the Senate side, did the Democrats have any say in crafting this budget, or were you pretty much ignored?
No, we had no say. In fact, we didn't even see the budget until, several hours before the vote. And that's true for members of the House and the Senate.
That's pretty devastating for you, isn't it, and for the other Democratic members?
Well, I would argue that more so than being devastating for us, it's devastating for the people of Arizona because it means that we don't have enough opportunity to actually understand the issues and understand the consequences and ramifications, both intended and unintended. And so, unfortunately, I think the public is the group who gets the short end of the stick here because they don't get to hear what's really happening with this budget.
When you look at that budget, it seems to be very devastating in several areas, health care and as far as education. Give us your thoughts on that.
Well, I think the budget really hits a couple areas hard. And the first area, of course, is public education. The cuts that we've seen to K-12 education are deeper than we've seen in years past. And the cuts in particular to universities are devastating. This is the largest cut in state's history to universities, and it's going to have long-term damage to our state's economy and our future. I think we'll really feel the impact of those university cuts 8 or 10 years down the road when we're not able to churn out highly qualified workforce. The cuts to health care are really interesting because the governor and the Republican legislature have voted on a budget that violates our state constitution and ignores the will of the voters in cutting this health care. So we're going to sue, and I think we'll prevail, and then the legislature will have to come back to readjust the budget because they've engaged in activity that's not lawful.
And these pass-me-downs to the cities and counties have certainly not, the pass-throughs have not really engendered a lot of goodwill among city and counties. I know folks here in Pima County are hopping mad about it.
Right, and Pima County should be mad about it. You know, the thing that's so difficult about that area of the budget cut is that cities and counties have had to suffer just like everyone else during this recession, and they've had to really suck it up and make lots of cuts and adjustments of their own. And to have the legislature basically push more costs and expenses onto them just increases their burden while the state is not being honest about its own fiscal matters. That's really unfair, I think, to local communities, and it may result in increase of local property taxes, which of course will be blamed on the local governments, but is really the fault of the state government.
We'll be talking to Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dubnik. He's not real happy with the legislature. That'll be tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show. Senator Sinema, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure, and I'm happy to join you anytime, especially in my own hometown of Tucson.
There you go. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Absolutely. Okay. Bye-bye.
That's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster. Check out BuckmasterShow.com, and please have a great day.
This is Tucson's Jolt.
This is a free exchange of ideas.
AM 1330, KJLL.
The American people deserve no less.
South Tucson.